Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm a feminist, but just before this Zoom recording, I had a spray tan. So over the hour, I am going to be developing like a Polaroid.
I really hope you go full ginger, because my girlfriend had one of these spray tans. Absolutely incredible. She is as white. She's luminous. You know, she glows in the dark, and she went, I can't even describe it, so brown on the first day, but it was actually racist. It was borderline racist. I was like, this is too much. What did you say to them that got you to this color? It was like, but it was so orange as well. Should we have a photo of her next to a tangerine?
Right.
And you couldn't tell the difference.
I've made some errors. I remember I used to have a lady that would come to me and she would say, do you want to look like you've had 2 weeks in the south of France or a month in Mallorca? And that's how she'd do it. So she wouldn't say light. So, you know, she'd take, how long do you want to look like you've been away and where? And my friend, who was very, very pale, ginger hair and very, you know, she was that luminous skin. She asked for 2 weeks in the south of France and she went, oh, honestly, yeah, darling, with your skin tone, you should do no more than a long weekend in Brighton.
Yeah, that's
very good advice.
I get them too, and they kind of melt away, which isn't very cute.
Emily, I know that feeling because I get sort of, you know, it sort of spots away and you end up looking very freckly for a little while.
But freckly is fine. And also the great thing about a spray tan is that you don't have to worry about a melanoma. You're just going straight in with the spray tan. You know, you're not like, look, I would do a spray tan, but it would look weird on me. It would look.
It looks weird on me too.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Look, already I look healthier. Look, already on the Zoom, I look healthier. I may have put my reading glasses on immediately, and so I might have big round raccoon eyes. And I
don't know. I'm a fan of the Irish tan, which is basically a blistering sunburn that sort of peels off to a light shade of brown.
Okay. That is really my speed. And I'm a feminist, but I love how white my teeth look when I've just had a spray tan. Like already, look how white my teeth look. It looks
they look like you've whitened them. Do you know what I thought? I thought perhaps you'd put that Zoom, you know, the Zoom filter, you know, where you can put the Zoom filter to the max.
This is completely natural, except the fact I had just had a lady come to my house, tell me to spread my legs.
And spray paint me.
So apart from that, it's all natural.
But not the middle bit. She sort of sprayed around it, did she?
No, she sprays absolutely everything.
Oh, she sprays it. She sprays your flaps. Okay. Yeah. Oh, great.
I mean, that's too far.
I mean, you said that you sprayed your legs and she sprayed everywhere. So
I mean, sort of like it's just so that you don't get this white line under your bum cheeks.
Yeah.
Do you kind of spread your legs and lean forward? The indignity of a spray tan is... It's like a reach around. You know, especially when they make you wear paper knickers.
like a reach around.
It doesn't leave you feeling expensive. I will say that. However, the afterglow, like tomorrow while I'm this golden brown, I look like I've just been on holidays and I'm just the most relaxed person in the world. And I've got this lovely, you know, I don't have to wear any foundation because my skin's very even.
Yeah, that's nice.
And my teeth look white and I'm just going to look and feel like some kind of bronzed up goddess.
I just find going to any sort of beautician situation, I find it quite painful for various different reasons. There seems to be an honesty kind of... there's things that you think, oh, you just keep that in your head, but you wouldn't say it out loud. I think a lot of women that work in beauty, like, you just need to hear the truth, love. So there's been times I've gone in and, you know, like, I don't know, I've had my legs waxed. And then at the end, she's gone, and now your chin. And I'm like, do you know what? Can we just focus on my ankles? Because goatee, did you want a goatee? I'm like, let me keep the goatee and let me feel like no one can see it. But now... I'm leaving here with my self-esteem down by my ankles.
I know exactly what you mean. And there is no shame in stubble of any sort, but I know what you mean. It's like, I didn't ask for that. And now the implication is there's something wrong with it. It's an implied criticism. I had a facial the other day, which was fantastic. But it sounds like I'm having all of these beauty treatments. It's only because I've been in lockdown so long and I've got a party to go to, which I know, you know, is a very new thing, the idea of a party. And everyone's having a COVID test in the morning. And, you know, it's literally show your COVID test at the door. So it's very, you know, it's someone's 30th and it's going to be like an outside marquee situation, that kind of thing. So it's all very safe, everyone. But I've not been to a party in so long. So I was like, I just need some things to make me feel like old, sociable Deborah. And so I've been asking people to scrub me and spray me.
Fine. Do it. Do what you've got to do. Actually, that leads quite well on to I'm a feminist because... I don't know about the rest of you. I know Deborah, you and Emily, you all look as always very glamorous. But I went feral during lockdown, so this is my guilty feminist moment. I'm a feminist, but pre-lockdown, if I'd seen a woman wearing trousers with an elastic waist, I confess I would have judged her. I'd have thought, you know what, love, you need to make an effort. This is tragic. You know, we've all seen these women sort of wandering around with their elastic waisted trousers doing adult colouring in, and you can't help thinking, that's my guilty feminist moment. But now I need to say, now I think these women are heroes. And I want to ask any woman that's listened to this, why are we not all just wearing trousers with an elastic waist? I mean,
no hard pants.
Yeah. I mean, like literally wandering around with these, I've got these tracksuit bottoms. You could fit another human being into them. I'm like, why? Why are we not doing this all the time?
Why do you not want the marsupial pouch option? You've gone full kangaroo now, Jen.
I've gone full kangaroo and I'm actually proud of it. And I actually celebrate my elastic waisted trousers.
So many people have said to me, jeans now are really weird. It's like they're hard and they're like, you have to button them up. And they're like, you know, so many people have gone, what weird clothing we wear, because they sort of always stand up on their own. And they've forgotten about jeans. And I wonder if jeans are not going to be... Do you know what I got? I went to Margate and I got a dropped crotch jumpsuit. And the drop crotch is a revolution.
Because
there's nothing up. You know, there's nothing...
It's not going up your cooch. I hear you. Absolutely. You sit
every
down.
Every crotch should be dropped. And that's a slogan you can take. I want T-shirts with that on Guilty Feminist. Every crotch should be dropped. I'm a feminist, but I read Raven Smith's column on Carrie Bradshaw and how he's worried because of those pictures he's seen. You know, the paps have been, you know, if they've been filming in New York City, the paps have been papping the costumes. And he's like, I'm really worried. It's not like, you know, Carrie always had these big moments and now she looks classy and classic. And, but, you know, he's like, I worry it's a bit ageist. Like, oh, well, a woman in her 50s can't be wearing big shapes and colors. And, you know, this, she was always sort of really over the top. And he said, I want to be known for my clothes. And he said, we all want to be memorable for our clothes and have, you know, waves in our clothes and turn heads with our clothes and be known for our clothes. And I immediately just went, I do want that, Raven Smith. I have to have that kind of outfit again that's just over the top and a bit ridiculous. And I went and bought something because I was so influenced by Raven Smith's Vogue column. And I messaged him in his DMs and said, you made me do this. And I messaged him with a picture of me.
Did you?
In a big silhouette with a corseted waist and said, he influenced me. I went, yes, I want that, Raven Smith. I want it.
What did he say?
He was so thrilled. So thrilled. He was like, he'd made a woman shop. It's all he lives for.
I feel that really undercuts what I was saying about the elastic waisted trousers, but I hear you.
No, I'm not
the right woman
clothes.
For this conversation, to be honest.
You're not meant to be buying clothes. It's bad for the environment. The answer is stop buying things and just wear what you've got until it wears out. I was going to do that. And then read this article. I was really planning on doing it. And then I read this article and I was like,
no.
No one's doing that, are they?
Hope we should all be buying a tenth of what we used to buy.
Well, I buy a tenth of what every woman buys, so I'm doing my bit already. I mean, to be honest with you, I've got no idea of fashion. I just wonder, if my girlfriend hadn't intervened 10 years ago, I'd still be wandering around with a polo shirt looking like Ronnie Corbett. So, I mean, I'm just delighted that there's another woman involved in my fashion sense.
Yeah. With those glasses, you cannot flirt.
I mean, you can't flirt
with any kind of Ronnie Corbett clothes with those glasses.
No, V-neck jumper, please put it away, Brista. Anyway.
You must not wear a V-neck jumper with those glasses.
Ever again.
You're flirting in a Corbetty range. You're a very beautiful woman, Jen Brista, and I'm a feminist, but that was widely commented upon in the Guilty Feminist tour. Many women said to me, gosh, Jen Brista's beautiful, like in the dressing room and things like that, when you'd come in and do your makeup or, I don't know, you know.
Never happened. I never put my makeup on.
Maybe not makeup, but, you know, do your ablutions, do your getting readies. People would say, gosh, she's got an absolutely beautiful face.
Well, I mean, at best, I'd be plucking a nose hair out, but yeah. I'm going to take that. I struggle with a compliment, Deborah, which is why I deflected it there.
You really do. I mean, that's an extreme. I mean, a lot of people go, don't be silly, or no, I don't.
No, you've
immediately
to
put out an image of personal grooming that's kind of, you know,
disgusting.
Yeah. In order for all of the thirsty listeners going, oh, Jen Brista, what you've done is you've undermined their arousal immediately because you're uncomfortable with it. I'm a feminist, but Jen Brista, I've just told you, you've undermined the arousal of my listeners who are thirsty for you.
I'm a feminist, but I can't take a fucking compliment. So there we go.
That's not just not taking a compliment. That's throwing it back in my face violently. So I actually was wounded with the corner of my own compliment to you.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. You nearly had your eye out. And there's not often a lesbian
really,
to say that.
Really? I was like, I nearly damaged myself on the compliment I gave you when it came bouncing back at me like an errant boomerang. From a variety of bedrooms and kitchens via Zoom, The Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Jen Brista, and our very special guest, Emily Rapp Black, talking about doing it. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Francis-White, with me is Jen Brista, and we're talking about doing it.
Yes.
And the it, Jen Brista, the it could refer to anything, just getting on and doing it. Now, it sounds like a saucy, racy title, like doing it. Mm. And it could refer to that. It could refer to that. Why are you making a face like you're not interested in doing it?
I am. But you know that when there's British people, we say doing it, then that has a very particular meaning, doesn't it?
So, yeah, that's right. Doing it. So do you feel you're someone who's doing it at the moment? Do you feel like, you know, you're now getting back out and doing stand-up comedy gigs because I've seen online?
Yes, I am. Am I doing it? I feel like I am doing it. Yeah, I am busy. I have been doing a lot of writing and I am out and about now. So it does, I mean, for a while it did feel a bit bleak, but I feel like things are sort of getting back to normal. I don't know exactly how I feel about going to a comedy club that is packed full of 400 people in a room that's not ventilated and no one's wearing a mask, but maybe that's just me.
No, it isn't, because I started to think, look, once we're vaccinated, we've got to live our lives at some point. But then I was listening to Dr. Fauci, who said the Delta variant means if you are in an enclosed space with somebody, you should be wearing a mask because it doesn't really matter that you've been double vaxxed. But Alan Cumming said on his Instagram that he'd be double vaxxed. He got the Delta variant, but he felt fine because he'd been double vaxxed. So being double vaxxed absolutely does change. You're still so much less likely to get it. You're so much less likely to spread it. And you're so much less likely to be hospitalized by it.
Oh, so absolutely.
Everyone absolutely must do it. But at the same time, my feeling, well, I'm double vaxxed, I'll sort of get back to life, probably was a little bit previous. So I belt and braces, double vax, get out there and be doing it, but be doing it with a mask on in an enclosed space and be doing it wisely and don't just be snogging everyone you meet.
As much as
that would be delightful to do, Jen Brester.
Ordinarily, that says, you know, that's my vibe. That's what I do. I step into a green room, I'm immediately out there snogging.
Tongues everywhere.
Tongues, everything. Always with a tongue.
I remember this. This is why people said you were so beautiful in the green room. They'd just been seduced by the glory of your snog.
Yeah, that's something I'm good at. Very good. I'm very
good. Are you?
I'm an absolute dynamite kisser. Yeah.
Are you? Have you had that review?
Yeah. Oh, I've had good reviews. Yeah. I've got very good reviews. Everything else, probably horrific at, but the kissing I think the kissing I can do. Absolutely. I'm going to give myself quite high marks.
Do you know what?
There's nobody here to contradict me.
I love the fact that you have not just taken that compliment, you have taken it, you have run with it, and you've turned it into a trophy.
It is. It's a bloody trophy, and I'm taking it. And actually, I'm going to give myself 9.5 out of 10.
Stars.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very high Uber rating. I'm so delighted by that. But I now know you're quite polar with compliments. You either throw it back like a weapon, or you turn it into an Oscar. So there's only one way. So I'm going to now throw you some compliments, Jen Brister, and see
how
we go down.
Deborah.
Jen Brister.
Oh, fucking
hell. I think you're a very good stand-up comedian, and I always find you very funny.
Okay. Yes, I'll take that.
It could go either way. This one, it could go either way. We thought we were going to go for the Oscar, but it might be a boomerang.
Oh, tits. You're absolutely right. I am... if anything, one of the finest stand-up comedians in this country. See what I did there?
Yes.
I actually went...
Come on, Jen Brister. Okay. Jen Brister.
Yeah.
I've always liked your style. I think, you know, you come in and you wear...
daft.
A well-cut trouser.
There's no one saying that Jen Brister's got a good sense of style. I mean, I just turn up in a pair of trousers and a shirt.
Okay,
you, on the other hand, are in some sort of incredible, sort of well thought out outfit with glasses to match and some, your makeup's done to the perfection and you've got accessories, Deborah.
The idea of accessories
is wearing a belt. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, that kind of came back at me. Jen Brister, I read your book and thought it was exceptional. And well, I think everyone should read it.
No one's read it, but okay.
That's not true. I just told you I've read it. I know one.
No, you are someone, but you are also my friend. So, yeah.
Okay, that's a boomerang.
Right,
that came right back at me. No, yeah. All right, fine is no good.
Can I do a redo? Okay, all right.
Jen Brister, I read your book and thought it was exceptional.
Thank you so much. I'm very proud of it. It took me quite a long time to write it and I'm delighted you enjoyed it.
I really did. And I think it could be very, very useful for communicating a sort of rare message, really, about same-sex couples and how it is in a patriarchal society raising children together.
I think there's very few books that do it, and mine is definitely one of the first. And if you are...
oh, she's struggling.
Oh, shit. You know, same sex thing, then, you know, Google it. Google it.
You're
just
a same
it.
Sex thing, Google it. This has fallen wildly apart. It's a really good book, guys. I'm going to, this is not a compliment for Jen to take. I can see she's dodging it like we're doing paintball. Jen Brister, finally, you and your partner make a great couple, I think. You know, when I've seen you together, I think you've got a really dynamic energy between you.
Okay. Well, lockdown may have changed that energy.
Dodged. Successfully dodged. Successfully dodged. Jen Brister, you've got a lovely Choose Love print behind you and also a Choose Love bag. And I really
I've got the way you engage
with the world and you do care about issues.
I do. Very much engaged with the Choose Love organisation and what they're doing for refugees, because I think there's very little being done by our horrific government, if anything, making it harder for people who are in desperate situations. So I will do, literally, if they ask me to do anything, I will drop it and do it, if I can, obviously.
That compliment was, you know, immediately shone a light on to Choose Love, great. And then it was turned into a weapon against Priti Patel. And I have no problem with that.
No,
I think you've won the game of compliments. Well done, Jen Brister.
Oh my God, I've done it.
You were doing it. Look, that's the best response I've had to a compliment, is you punching the air with both arms going, I'm doing it.
Although I did spot a bingo wing, did you?
Ha!
See what I did there.
You're a feminist, Bart. It must be time to get our guest on. Hello, Guilty Feminist. On the 10th and 11th of September, we have two really big, spectacular all-singing, all-dancing shows at the South Bank Centre. We're at the Queen Elizabeth Hall, 7:30 p.m. Get your tickets now at southbankcentre.co.uk, or you can find tickets to anything at guiltyfeminist.com and click through. We will be coming to Australia and New Zealand in October and November. Some of the best shows we've ever done have been in Australia and New Zealand, so we're very, very excited to come back. We will be on the 21st of October in Wellington, 22nd in Christchurch, 23rd in Auckland, 26th in Sydney, 29th in Perth, 31st in Canberra, 3rd of November in Adelaide, the 5th of November in Melbourne, and the 8th of November in Brisbane. So get tickets now, guiltyfeminist.com. If any of the dates have to move, we'll transfer your ticket over or refund your money. So buy with confidence, but do buy as soon as you possibly can, because tickets to the Australian New Zealand shows always sell out. And now back to the podcast. Our guest today is a New York Times best-selling author and literary scholar. Her latest book explores art and disability through the life of Frida Kahlo. Please welcome Emily Rapp Black. So Emily Rapp Black, you're a woman who is doing it. You've got a huge book out there. It's a New York Times bestseller. Now, it's hard to be a New York Times bestseller. And, you know, you've just walked that. But also you've written about somebody, a famous feminist, Frida Kahlo, who really is someone that did it. And speaking of people who made big personal fashion statements, but also never used tweezers and would not throw a compliment back at me if I said everyone's lusting after you, Frida. She wouldn't.
Okay.
She'd go,
all
yes.
All right. I'm going to
yes,
look. Just let's move on from that, okay?
Yes, they are. She's a Spanish woman as well. Just saying. You're Spanish, aren't
Mexican.
You?
Mexican.
Hispanic.
Okay.
You are both Hispanic women, you and Frida Kahlo. Frida Kahlo never asked to borrow your tweezers, though, because she famously wouldn't.
And you know what? If I was in Frida Kahlo's presence, I would not. I'd have gone full unibrow.
Well, you wonder what the waxer would have said to her if she'd said, wax my legs. You really wonder if that waxer would have dared to say to Frida. That was her signature. Her signature was monobrow. And it looks amazing on her. And she redefines beauty in so many ways, and she made art out of herself all of the time. And then she made art out of making art out of herself in a remarkable fashion. So, Emily, you're out there doing this, writing about a woman who was out there doing it. Could you please tell us what drew you to Frida Kahlo?
I think that she was out there doing it. Well, when I was younger, I fell upon her book because my brother brought home a girlfriend of a long string of girlfriends. And she was an art major and she had this book about Frida Kahlo. And I opened it and I was like, what? Like, I don't know anything about art. All I know is that if I see something and it moves me, then I'm into it, right?
Yeah. Well, that's all you need to know about art, really.
That's basically, yeah. So, and I was just completely taken with it. And I read every book I could about her. I tried to paint, which was sad and pathetic. And then realized that I had no skills as a visual artist, but that I could write about her. And so I had this kind of obsessive imaginary friendship with her, to be honest, for a bulk of my life and kind of in secret. So when I wrote this book, I was like, ooh, I'm doing this, but it feels weird because it's all the stuff I never thought I'd say out loud. And then it was fine once I did it, was doing it. So I think I was drawn to her because I knew she had a disability. I knew that she made art, beautiful art. Everyone knew her. I knew that she lived an alternative lifestyle. And those were all things that I had experienced and wanted to do, but grew up in like farmland in the American Midwest, where people, alternative means like not wear, like not having the same bag as everyone else. So, you know, I was in for it.
You were someone who'd experienced disability, and so her art spoke to you because she had a disability. Can you speak to that a little bit more and maybe also tell the listeners what her disability was and how you related to it?
So Frida Kahlo had many sort of bodily problems. I would say they were problems because they were painful, and I think it's okay to say that. She was in a terrible bus accident after she had polio. So she had polio, then she was in a bus accident, and her back was compromised her whole life. And then she lost her leg when she was like the year before she died. And I lost my leg when I was 4. And I was also in a series of back braces and traction and, you know, fun orthopedic devices that haven't changed that much, it turns out, in 50 years. And so, you know, I'd never seen a woman, a successful woman, a woman who was revered, a woman who was herself and had a disability. Like for me, it was just completely new. So she made paintings and she made all kinds of things and she had all kinds of lovers and was not at all the sort of the cloying, pathetic woman that she's often made out to be in terms of her husband, Diego Rivera, who she loved very much. And I don't know, I felt that, you know, so many times people say to me still, you know, you're so brave, or, you know, your pain inspires you. And it's just, pain doesn't inspire anyone. It's just pain. So I admired her for making art in spite of the pain, not because of it. Like that wasn't the engine.
That is such an important point, because I think
a lot
of people say, oh, well, you know, your depression feeds your writing, or your, you know, once. I mean, I'm not saying they say that to me, but I mean, in general, they say to people, to artists, your depression feeds your writing. Oh, well, he was someone who was bipolar and had a really lot of, suffered a lot in his life. But without that in his life, or without that in her life, oh, they wouldn't have created all this art. How do you feel about that? Because that's such received wisdom.
I think it's bullshit, to be honest. Like, I think if Vincent van Gogh had had some medication, he would have made even more paintings and not wounded himself. Like, I think that's a very ableist way of thinking about what bodies do and how art is made. So art is made often, I think, well, most of the time, through a crucible experience, which is uncomfortable and squeezing you tight, but that isn't necessarily pain. Like pain and misery are just that. Like it just like if you think about if somebody poked your eye out, you wouldn't be like, oh, I think I want to write a poem. You would be like, ah, my eye. Like, and until that was fixed, that would be the only thing you could think about. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be like, I'm going to make beautiful art out of my suffering. That's just ridiculous. And it's also very much linked, I think, to the messages we get from Christian culture, where suffering is elevated as a kind of...
That's a great point.
Moral.
As children, we see, if we're in a Christian culture, Christ suffering on the cross. And it's sort of somehow given an iconic and reverent status. And not to diminish anyone's faith in any way, but that can bleed into us thinking suffering is good or suffering is the goal.
And also, I think there was a point in the article that I read in The Guardian, which I think is an excerpt from your book, where you talk about these women that are looking at some Frida Kahlo paintings and say, oh gosh, isn't it really awful that she suffered so, and that she had such an awful life, and that she was in so much pain, and how sorry they felt for her. But in fact, you say, well, how could somebody who created so much art, you know, how could their life be miserable? Why would you feel sorry for somebody? Because it's not in a way that if somebody had this sort of like constant turgid and miserable life that they would never have been able to create. The body of work that she did, that really spoke to me. I just thought that that was really interesting, because when people talk about Frida Kahlo, they often talk about the suffering that she had in her relationship, because that was often very fractious and because of the disabilities and her accidents and the pain that she lived with, rather than the joy that she must have had. And the and also that what you were saying about the crucible, about, I mean, that you're much more eloquent than I am, but certainly the art is often created by discomfort, but not by agony and misery.
Yeah, I mean, we love a suffering woman, right? A suffering woman is a good,
I know, it's so boring.
A happy woman is dangerous. A joyful woman is dangerous. A creative woman.
We don't really want women in their power.
No.
No one does. I mean, well, men don't. Or the patriarchy, not all men. The patriarchy doesn't. I mean,
hashtag not all men. Not if you're listening. Oh, yeah. Know that you're, but also some, like, it's also, but some women have internalized misogyny, and we
absolutely
also have that same thing.
I think women have it. We have that internalized misogyny where we struggle to sort of deal with this woman that is successful and doing well and is happy. And you know, it doesn't sit well with us. You know,
it's like Gwyneth, Paltrow.
Doing it. I said, someone who's doing it.
I thought you said Gwyneth, like Gwyneth Paltrow.
No, I didn't say Gwyneth.
I thought you were making, although there was a small ad break for Goop there.
She people actively like hate her. It's just like, why? I mean, whatever. Like, she's doing it.
Yeah, she's doing it. She's made a lot of money spouting utter bollocks, but she is doing it.
And the vagina candle, which is weird, but okay. Maybe some people dig it. I don't know.
It's true. I have problems with some of the claims made, but which is fair, absolutely fair and right. But I think you're right. Some people dislike Gwyneth Paltrow because she's successful, beautiful, and is an entrepreneur. And they're like, it's too much. Shut up.
Too much.
And so, you know, they're not just taking her based on her claims. And a man in a similar situation would often be celebrated more. Mm-hmm. This is not to say I'm a big fan of Goop, just to be unbelievably clear.
Although you can get a necklace that doubles up as a vibrator. And all I'm saying is it's $125.
Or a t-shirt for $400.
A yoga mat for its 80 quid. Which I think, unless it's...
A necklace that doubles as a vagina, sorry.
Not as a vagina. Oh, well, yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow's wandering around with a vagina around her neck. Oh,
sorry, vibrator.
Yeah, it's a little tiny... There, she's got a vulva around her neck. No, it's just a little...
vibrator.
I mean, people would buy that. This is the kind of crap. If Gwyneth walked around with a vag around her neck, people would be like, sure, why not?
I've definitely seen vag jewellery, but not an actual replica vag. That would be a step too far even for the Met Ball, wouldn't it? But the vibrator, sorry, can we just backtrack a tiny bit? If you've got a little vibrator around your neck, which I can see how you could hide that and it could look like a pendant.
It's discreet. It just looks like a pendant and then you pop it down there.
What if it just goes off in the
meeting?
What if you sort of go like that and it bangs your body and then suddenly you're like,
just say, oh, that's...
Yeah, then you have to be like, oh.
This is about my chakras. Yeah, it's a calming device.
Yeah.
No one's buying that.
If a little thing went off around a woman's neck and she went, it's all about my chakras and mine, I'd be like, sure, babe. I wouldn't be like, oh, she's got a fucking vibrator around her neck. Come on!
I'm all about buying less, so I'm just going to turn my current rampant rabbit into a pendant.
Yeah,
there you go.
Just spread us, you know.
Yeah,
think it's got a little hole.
That's not discreet. You're going to look like Flavor Flav, aren't you? Wandering around with a flipping dildo.
I'm good with it. I'm a woman in my power, and I will not be cowed by the patriarchy. I feel like it's something Frida Kahlo might have done in a different age.
She might put it in her hair.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you know
as
what?
A headpiece.
But she'd be able to. Yeah, she'd be able to carry it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
You've both referred to her fractious relationship with her lover. Could you tell us a little bit more, Emily? Because this episode is titled Doing It. So we'd like to know more lover details, please.
Details, please. Well, she met Diego when she was still in grammar school. He was painting
a mural. Sounds like a bad boy, Diego, doesn't he?
Right, yeah. He was painting a mural called Creation of the World at her school. So she walked by him painting that every day, which is pretty epic.
How old was she? How old was he?
He was 20 years older than she was. So she would have been probably, yeah. So not a huge, huge difference in age, but, you know, big enough.
Sorry, if you meet someone when they're at school and you've been trusted to come in and paint the mural.
Well, he wasn't doing anything. They weren't doing it then. They met then. So she knew about him. And then when she became an artist.
I think anyone who met you when you were in school uniform is a dodger.
Different time, Deborah. He was a worse time.
Yeah,
Our country as well.
But so she's there in a little Catholic school skirt.
I don't know. Well, she probably was on crutches because she had polio. So she, you know, she wasn't like, you know, sprinting ahead as the hottie of the pack by any means. But, you know.
Well, you don't know that. I mean, she was a very beautiful
woman. I don't think she was
in a Kappa Alpha Gamma doing cheerleading. Let's just tell, I think she.
She's Frida freaking Kahlo at any age. I'm sorry. I still feel she's Frida Kahlo in a Catholic school skirt. She's also got a dimension to her, a story to tell. She's more interesting than a lot of the teenagers her own age. Is grammar school, how old is grammar school?
Oh, yeah, like, you know, if he was 30, she would have been like 10.
So she was a child.
She was a child.
She wasn't an adolescent. Oh, okay. I take all of these comments back.
She didn't meet him then.
She was like a 16-year-old or something.
They were not doing it then, no.
They couldn't be doing it then, because if anything was going on then, he's just a paedophile and that's just an assault.
I think we wouldn't be celebrating him if he'd been doing it.
He meets her at 10. He's still a dodger, sorry. But then,
he wasn't the nicest.
I think he was a dodger the whole way through the relationship.
Yeah, he was, but so was she. She was doing stuff. She was doing it with other people, women. You know, she had many lovers that she took that are, you know, you can't prove it in a court of law or anything. But in her journal, she talks about how much she loves Diego. And it's this kind of love that has a kind of, I don't know, mystical feel to it. She isn't cloying and waiting for him to come back and, oh, poor crippled Frida in her bed, like he doesn't want her. And he did. It's just that she wanted other people and he did too. And they had a very kind of modern relationship, if you want to say that's modern. But they had a very non-traditional relationship, especially during
that time. They had an open relationship.
He was incredibly celebrated, wasn't he? And I expect he still is in Mexico. But am I wrong to say that now... Would it be fair to say that she has eclipsed him?
Well, yeah, there's no socks with his face on them.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have a Diego tote bag. I'm just saying.
Nobody wants that. I won't
be getting one.
No.
The most I'll be doing is buying a packet of Jammy Dodgers. That's my Diego tribute.
There you go. Yeah, no, he was like a big kind of cannonball of a fleshy man. Like, he wasn't beautiful in the way that she is. In the sense of...
Or a patriarchal norm standard, yeah.
And part of that was her fashion choices, too. I mean, her face was also amazing, but her fashion choices were pretty bomb.
Yeah, she sticks out in a crowd. I mean, if you're going to see the two of them walking down the street, you're going to be drawn to her immediately, aren't you?
Yeah.
Not this dumpy sort of middle-aged bloke.
But also, let's not be fattest either. Let's not be fatphobic.
Oh, sorry, apologise. I didn't mean it like in a...
No, I don't mean that at all. I'm just saying.
I just meant in a sort of, you know, like an average-looking guy.
He's an average-looking guy. He's an average-looking guy. But Frida Kahlo, I mean, all heads turn. And frankly, if Frida Kahlo's walking down the street with anyone, they'd be invisible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you were young, you drew a lot of parallels between your experience and Frida Kahlo's experience, and that seems to have continued on through your adulthood. And do you feel like that she will stay with you as that sort of companion through your life, that you'll continue to feel that sort of connection with her, both as an artist and as a woman?
I do. I'm very taken with her story, with how she shaped my life as an artist. Absolutely. And, you know, part of that has to do with one of the parts of her journal that's now in part of a kid's book is when she talks about her imaginary friend. And it's basically like this beautiful depiction of female friendship, which for me has been one of the most important things in my life. Like, my female friends have outlasted everyone else, men, and it just, that's been my people. And, you know, I had imaginary friends when I was little. One was called Killer. He was extreme. And then the other one was Jenny, who was sort of like a painter and a hiker. She was like she would climb up.
That's too. Did they get on?
They went on adventures together. But okay. I used to write about them, and I had never seen that in an adult woman's journal when she was talking about how she had these imaginary friends when she was in the hospital. And she had a window where she would go through and like have this experience. And I had the same thing. I was also in the hospital, also on my back, also in a back brace. That's when Killer and Jenny came in handy. They could do stuff.
Yeah.
Killer didn't kill anyone. He was just kind of angry. He was an angry bird.
I really feel like I connect with Killer. I really do.
I feel a little sorry for Killer's unfortunate nickname, given he hasn't killed anyone.
No. Yeah, but he's got killer instinct. He just goes for things. He's not messing about.
Killer is doing it.
He's doing it. He's doing it.
And if you're doing anything wrong, he's not into it. He's like, defender.
Killer instinct.
I find it really interesting, basically, because, you know, when you're young, you form these attachments with people, don't you? Or like celebrities or pop stars or whatever. And then you kind of like turn them over, don't you? You're like, ditched Kylie Minogue 20 years ago or whatever. I'm a Kylie fan. Look, all the Kylie fans, God, calm down. What I'm saying is that you form these attachments. I know you're going to get them. I won't get them. You'll get them. We form these attachments as children, don't we? But it's rare that we keep that connection with somebody as you have. Mm-hmm. And I find that fascinating. But I also think that that's such a beautiful thing to have.
It is.
I'm slightly envious of it.
Well, I had a friend, one of my earliest friends. We had a secret language that we could still speak.
Wow.
I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, we can speak in code. Yeah.
Can you remember any of it?
No, I'm not going to say it. It's secret. No, it's like...
No, but you could say something. I wouldn't know what you were saying. It'd be gobbledygook.
The way the words are organized, and it's more of a written language than a spoken language. It's like
what
Hebrew was before Israel. And we don't do it as much as we used to, but like, this is someone I knew when I was seven.
Sure, so I want to tap into this.
So I think also too, I mean, when you're someone that is in the hospital a lot or has a non-normative body experience, which is all of us eventually, but when you're really young and that happens, you look to narratives to sort of make sense of your own, because yours seems kind of like an outlier, or mine did for certain. So I think you looked for guides, really. And she was just one of my guides. And Tolstoy. I'm a feminist, but my favorite book is War and Peace.
Oh, wow.
My godfather is a Russian literature professor. And when I was in the hospital, he read that book to me in Russian. And I don't speak Russian, and I never will and don't want to, but no offense to anyone Russian, but I am too old to learn language. My brain is too fossilized. But I think that stayed with me, and I love that book. I love it. I love it. I listen to it or read it every year in English. But it has this visceral feeling to me.
Yeah. These are the things that spoke to you as a small child who had, as you say, a non-normative experience with your body. So those works of fiction, those people who you connected with somehow, strangely Dostoevsky and less strangely Frida Kahlo, who had a very similar disability to you. And you talked about female friendship and, you know, your friend who you had a language with and how it's seen you through, you know, beyond relationships with men. And I really was saying this to a friend of mine recently, that I said, when she comes over next, she lives in America. And I said, when you come over, I want a friend of mine who's a photographer to take some really beautiful pictures of us. I was like, we can dress up, you know. And I want like really lovely pictures that we can, you know, keep. And she was like, oh, I don't know that I'm, you know, like, will I be looking my best? You know, and I was like, okay, stop. You have pictures with your ex-husband, wedding pictures that cost you a lot of money, and you're not with him anymore. You have pictures with your children, professional pictures that you've paid for, taken with your children. And I am telling you right now that those children will be off at college and then off, you know, when they're in their 20s, you will phone them. And they will be like, oh, yeah, hi. Yeah, I don't really have time to talk. Oh, well, I don't know. Well, I can't come home on the weekend now. No, I told Dad. I said no. And that's what they're going to be. But there you are, paid pictures of them. And I said, where will I be? Oh, I'll still be on that phone talking to you for an hour and a half about how your sons are not very interested in talking to you and how that makes you feel. Who should have professional pictures? She went, you're absolutely right. It's booked.
I want to do that with my friend who's also British. So she's my best friend. We need
and
pictures.
I've got other friends. I'm like, we're doing a shoot. I want to get a group of women together that I love who, you know, who, and I want to have a Vanity Fair style shoot where we all lean on a ladder in a ball gown, you know, in a, like, you know, like Vanity Fair front covers.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I may have lost you now.
Everyone's wearing a different kind of black dress.
Yeah,
exactly.
Color scheme.
And you don't want to be the person that's in the crease.
Oh, yeah, in the crease.
No.
You don't want to be in the crease. I always feel for the person in the crease.
Yeah, that's disappointing if you end
up
in
the
crease.
Yeah, where your face is folded in half. I'm so sorry for them.
But that's what I really do believe in, having a beautiful, you know, whether or not you, I happen to know, I've got a friend who's a professional photographer who, you know, you don't have to have a professional photographer, you can have an iPhone on a stand, that you can do amazing things with photos now. But I do think women should get together.
It's a ritual, isn't it? If you haven't got a photographer, it's a moment. Yeah. It's a celebration. A thing.
Not everyone can afford it, but get one of your friends, you know, get some nice lights going on, get dressed up, like make it a proper shoot. Even if you're taking turns of taking photos and things like that, make it a proper shoot where you actually say, we're not just going to take a selfie in a restaurant with one of us with an arm out here. You know, like, we're going to do a proper shoot. And these photos are going to be framed, and these photos are going to be special, because they're the people who are going to be in your life forever. And honestly, if you are heterosexual, they will outlast many men. And if you are not heterosexual, they may outlast some of your girlfriends / wives.
I agree.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing to say that just because you're in a lesbian relationship or in a relationship with a woman that relationship will last any longer, or that you'll like them any more than your best friend. Because, you know, when you're with everyone, that person every day, after a while.
You know, I did a version of this. A friend of mine's a photographer. And in the 90s, she took a picture of my other friend. The three of us were really close at that time and still are. And it was 90s. So we were wearing overalls. Oh, yeah. Overalls, Doc Martin boots. We look ridiculous. I love those photos. First of all, we look 12. Because we're wearing overalls, even though we're in our 20s. And it's just like, it's everything that's the 90s. Chokers.
It's overalls dungarees.
Yes. And they're back.
Okay.
Because the 90s
they are back,
so
man.
Far away now that it's become vintage, which is deeply horrible.
Absolutely. Everybody's in dungarees again. Yeah. And the DMs are back. So we've come full circle. In fact, I'm finally in fashion.
White t-shirts.
Yeah,
right,
you wait long enough, you'll hit the decade.
Oh my god!
It was white t-shirts around. With little shoestring strap dresses over the top. That was a real 90s look as well. But my rule is, if I can remember wearing it the first time, I don't wear it the second time. That's my personal rule. But I might throw that rule away because fuck it. Because would Frida care about that? No, she'd be making her own fashion.
She made her own clothes. Yeah,
did she?
Well, they don't look like they came off a hanger. That's for sure. I was like,
no,
what?
No, she look like that. You look. That's fair.
And I actually, you know, there's that the show Killing Eve, which is one of my favorite shows because of the fashion. I'd be watching that, and I would like be Googling all the things she's wearing, and they're like $7 million or whatever. So I was like, okay, I can go down to the thrift store and I can buy a dress that's light blue and looks like that Gucci one and make it fit me, and it's kind of the same.
Yes.
Oh, I love what you're saying.
So much more sustainable as well. Economical and sustainable.
That would never occur to me. It would never occur to me to look at someone wearing something and go, oh, I'll just head down to a charity shop and see if I can. I just go, well, that looks great on them. And that's the end of this thought that I've just had. And that's where the thought would die.
Emily's got a touch of the Frida about her there. She's like, how can I make that art into my space? Do you know, I will tell you something. I recently rewatched Arrested Development.
Oh, God.
And
yeah,
the first time I watched that, when it came out, probably in the noughties or whatever, I remember really wanting Portia de Rossi's wardrobe.
Yes. And
this time I watched it, I thought, where did Lucille get that blazer? I started admiring Lucille's blazers. I was into a real blazer fetish.
Oh, no.
And I was like, okay, back away, back away. You were not yet Lucille. You do not need to lead into the blazer. And I stopped with the blazers. I was coveting a Lucille blazer. Yeah.
But, you know, this is also something that has to do with disability, I think, because I am a teacher, I'm a professor, and I am known for my crazy outfits, in quotation. So I always get these evals where they're like, oh, I don't like her clothes. They're too weird.
What? Or
she sweats too much. So I'm like, oh, it's on. So actually, after I got a set of evals that had that, I did them like the contrasting animal print. I did like an all white outfit. I wore a flower. I was just like, game on. Like, I will wear whatever I want.
Absolutely.
Although also, I'm going to admit something now. I'm a feminist, but Emily, I'm really sorry. But I tried on a dress and it was a sort of capacious-y tent dress. Ooh. And the salesperson said, what do you think? And I said, I look like an art teacher.
Oh!
I'm so sorry.
I teach writing. So it's a kind of art, but we don't have paint.
But you're writing about an artist. So
yes.
You're sort of art teacher.
A tent dress is really kind of a mistake most of the time.
Yeah. It was a capacious tent dress.
I don't even know what a tent dress is.
It's like bag.
Yeah,
I just imagine that you're in a tent, and that's what. And you
like, imagine that.
It kind of looks like you poked your head up out of a tent.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I can tell you that.
Decided to wear the tent.
Yeah. I had an art teacher, and I remember she used to wear a big smock that had like little plastic naked babies sewn onto it, things like that that were just absolutely random. And that sort of art teacher look of like, I'm going to be wacky, I'm going to be wild. I always enjoy it. I want to see more art teacher fashion. I don't necessarily feel I can carry it off, but Emily, I feel you can and you must.
Well, my shit's not baggy though. It's tight. Yeah.
Listen.
I think it's bizarre that students are commenting on.
Get a grip.
I know. And you sweat. I mean, I do. I'm a feminist, but I sweat like a man. I've been told this so many times.
Well, I mean, I don't know what that's supposed to mean. What does that even mean?
It's healthy.
No, like, I think sweating is good.
I think as women, we have told each other that we don't sweat. Yeah, we've been told that women don't sweat. We all sweat.
Over here.
We all sweat. Also, you live in bloody California where it's like a bazillion degrees. Of course.
Yeah, I used to live in Texas. I'm like, nope, it's not raining. This is called perspiration. Like,
yeah, of course you're sweating. Listen, if you're here in the UK, we get 21 degrees and we are literally like just in our underwear, crawling on our
with
hands
a fan
and knees,
on in front of an open window.
For oxygen.
That's true.
I can't. So let alone if we actually experienced heat. I think we just melt.
Yeah. You know, I did a TV show during the sort of time of lockdown where you were allowed to go into the studio, but there was no makeup artist there because they were trying to limit contact.
Oh.
And, you know, under those lights, you perspire. And normally on TV shows, they come and powder
you. They powder you.
But they didn't. And someone online went, oh, she's very, you know, she looks like she's
shiny.
Really, perspiring. Yeah. And I was like, I'm under TV studio lights. I'm a human being and no one's bringing, and I didn't know you had to bring your own powder. I assumed there'd be someone there for touch-ups and there was not. And they said it was COVID, but it wasn't because I did another TV show that week. And frankly, they had makeup and it was both the BBC. And that one, I think, was just trying to save money. That's what I think.
Yeah. I had the same thing where I had to have a makeup tutorial. So that's that, if you can imagine.
You had to do your own.
Yeah, full makeup. And we went very heavy on the eyes. I'm going to say too heavy. I'm going to put it out there.
You cannot go too heavy on the eyes.
That's what she said, and she was wrong. I looked like a bloody raccoon, okay? You can go too heavy on this letter, all right? I was like, especially, you can go heavy on the eyes if you like, but I feel very confident about all the rest of it. I looked like one of the monsters. It wasn't great.
I don't believe you. I want to see it. I wear Lola's lashes, which are magnetic. So you do a magnetic eyeliner. Frida Kahlo would love these. You do a magnetic eyliner, just a normal, look, it seems like a normal eyeliner.
It's like
secretly magnetic. And then you put the lash on like it's a fridge magnet.
Right.
And that changes my appearance so much. I'm actually waiting for a delivery of Lola's lashes so I can wear them on the weekend. I'm obsessed with them. I'm obsessed with Lola's lashes because they change my appearance so much. Of all the things Frida did and wore and painted and said, Emily, what would you most like to emulate? What do you feel most connected to?
I like that she had her own personal style, which I endeavored to do myself and always have. It's, I think, something to, as a someone that has a disability, it's a kind of deflection as well as a kind of, this is who I am deal. So that would be the one thing. And also just the integrity that she had about writing about herself in a way that I think for me is the same for me, is maintaining privacy. Even though she drew a picture of her face, you know, she's famous for the self-portrait. But for me, it's she saying, this is what you get. The other narrative that you chose to put on me, you don't get to have it. Like, here's my face. Like, this is it. Like, I like that. And that's what I feel memoir is for me. It's like people ask me these questions, rude questions in elevators all my life. And now I'm like, oh, I wrote a book. And now we no longer have to have a conversation. Goodbye.
So do you just say, buy my book in an elevator? If they ask a rude question about your disability.
Well, like, oh, what happened to you? How far does your leg go up? Do you shower with it on? I'm like, we just met. Hi, we're not doing it. So I'll say, I wrote a book and you're free to buy it.
Fantastic response.
Good. Yeah, that is a brilliant response. I just find it absolutely blows my brain that people feel like they have any the permission or would even have the desire to ask such intrusive questions.
Or it's like in pregnant women, people touch their bellies just without asking. I used to just, it was usually a dude that did that, a man that would do that. I would just touch his belly and he'd be like, oh, I'm like, it's a little weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. I mean, on a much, you know, on a much sort of smaller sort of scale, but I certainly got the same thing when my girlfriend was pregnant and we would get asked, I'd get like, oh, so you must be excited for your friend. And I'd go, actually, she's my partner and we're, you know, co-parenting. We're going to be parents. And people would then go, oh, right. Okay. So how did that happen? How did you do that, love?
Yeah.
Who's the dad? Who's the mum? Was it origami? How did you get kids? It's like flipping neck, love. We've literally just met walking down the street. It blows your brain that people go from zero to wanting to know what our sex life is to wanting to know. But if you're two women, how does it work? It's like none. Google it, love. Google it. There's all kinds of ways we could have done it. Google it and just pick one and that might be it. Okay,
you've written a book on this, haven't you, called...
I have written a book about it, yes. Ooh, called The Other Mother.
But, the Other Mother.
And also,
so now your response is, read my book?
Read my
conversation
book.
Conversation done. Yeah, it's very strange to have someone like, oh, so do you? What do you do with your leg when you shower? I'm like, hi, I don't know you. And you'll never know.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not going to be doing it, ever.
That fascinates me because you wouldn't say to a heterosexual couple, what position were you in when you conceived?
Yeah.
Because I've heard that wheelbarrow... is very good for conception.
So true.
I'm trying to conceive. Do you think that missionary position is good? Could it have been then that you, because also you don't want to apply to a straight couple. They might have used IUI, they might have used IVF, they might have adopted the child.
Exactly.
It might be the mother or the father's child, and you know, the stepchild. It could be, you know, there's all sorts of
different
ways.
And who's to say I'm not very, very virile? Nobody knows. Exactly. I think that's really taking a lot away from me. And that's the other thing.
I feel if any woman could knock another woman up, it'd be you, Jen Brewster.
It absolutely would be. Look at me. Even though I am very much menopausal, so that's probably not true. Happy days. Hey, but I like the thing that you were saying, Emily, about those boundaries and about privacy. I find to be true because my stand-up is autobiographical, very sort of anecdotal and autobiographical, and people will always say things to me like, oh, God, you really talk so much. I feel like I know a lot about you. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know 1%. You know so little, a tiny, tiny, tiny smidge about my life. And most of it's made up.
Fictionalized.
It's not. It's absolutely not. It's completely fact. And, you know, people step away from, like, reading my book and go, I feel like I know everything about you. It's like, I barely told you anything.
Yeah.
If you read my book, you've got, like,
leave you alone. Yeah.
Six different stories, if you think that's my life.
On the other hand, I have, through my Ready For series, Rolls the Dice, and through doing lots of episodes of The Guilty Feminist, I'm sorry, you do know everything about me. If you read and consume my whole canon, there's very little left. I have put it all out on the table, and I regret some of it, honestly, but not much. There's a few secrets, but like three. I've got three secrets left.
That's actually not true, Deborah. That's not true. You talk a talk and that's very nice, but that isn't true. There's a lot about you that people don't know. And there's a lot about you that you keep you keep your cards very close to your chest.
Name a thing.
Literally anything. You give 11% maximum of any conversation about anything.
I would say sometimes I censor because Tom Selinsky's the producer and he's my husband. But I'm not censoring from my listeners. I'm censoring from my producer. To be honest, if we got a new producer who was happy to engineer and edit, maybe we could. Maybe we should do like three episodes where Tom out of that chair. And I tell them everything. He never listens. And then he comes back. Tom, how would you feel about that? Tom's saying it's time to wind up.
Yeah, I have to.
And that's convenient, isn't it? Emily, is there anything you came to say that you didn't get to say?
Not really. This was really fun. I'm really glad that my best friend, who's British, told me about your podcast. And part of the book is dedicated to her. So I'll give her a little shout out. She knows who she is.
That's wonderful. And where can we buy your book and what is it called?
You can buy it online through, Amazon. But there are other places to buy it too.
You can buy it from someone who pays their tax.
Books, Notting Hill Editions.
I don't really want to buy it in a way that sends Bezos back into space, honestly. Can I buy it in another way?
And stay there, yeah.
Ask your local bookshop. I'm sure it's there.
Local. They can order it. And especially in Britain because it is a British publisher. Yeah.
I'm sure your bookshop already has a copy. I'm sure Waterstones has copies. I'm sure Blackwell's have copies. I'm sure Foyles have copies. What is it called?
Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg.
You can read an excerpt of it in the Guardian. If you go on the Guardian online,
Frida inspired dress.
It's brilliant. So if you want to get an idea of the book, go to the Guardian and have a read, and then go and order the bloody book.
Right, so it's Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg.
That's right.
Your name is Emily Rapp Black. A lot of great feminists have three names: Deborah Frances White, Emily Rapp Black, Jen. Yeah. What's your middle name?
Doesn't matter.
Jen doesn't matter. Brister. It's been an absolute delight. I know what everyone I know is getting for Christmas this year. So if you're a close personal friend of mine, please expect Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg in your stocking. It fits in a Christmas stocking. It's actually a great present because whether the person loves art, whether the person loves feminism, whether the person needs to be engaged more with disability or themselves has a disability, as so many people do, it's a book that will really speak to everyone. And it's also about a woman who is doing it. We get some hot and heavy Diego action in there. Although, again, Dodger. Maybe it was all above board and he just happened to meet her at 10 and he happened to meet her again at 25. But just men that are 20 years older, sometimes I'm like, maybe Dodger. But I'm glad that she had a full and frank sex life with lots and lots of people and it was open, because I wouldn't have wanted to be stuck with Diego the whole time. Let's be honest. Dodger. Jamie right. Dodger. Okay. Jen, have you got anything that you'd like to tell us about before you go?
I would love to recommend my podcast, which is called Women Talking Bollocks, which I do with my dear friends Maureen Younger and Alison June Smith. We're having a little hiatus at the moment for the summer, but we'll be back on again. But if you haven't listened to it, we've got a whole year's worth of episodes you could crack into. And it's just an irreverent, fun, silly podcast where we discuss things that are meaningful and important, but also just dumb stuff as well. Right. And it's a lot of fun.
And it's called
Women Talking Bollocks.
Go and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much, Jen Brister.
Woo! Thank you.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Jen Brister, and our very special guest, Emily Rapp Black. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer was Tom Selinsky for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Craft and Gina DCO and everyone who made this episode happen, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
Woo! Okay, great.
Talking about celebration. I came up with a brilliant turn of phrase and I didn't fucking write it down. It was like a sort of umbrella thing, but it was sort of like being, it's like
sort
the
of
value of the value of difference. It's like the value of being different. Do you know what I mean? Like the celebration of being different, or plowing your own furrow. Is plowing your own furrow good?
Yeah, I like that. A little bit.
No?
I mean, I don't.
Emily, what do you think?
I've never farmed, so I don't know.
I don't farm, so it could be.
What about a celebration of difference? I mean,
okay.
Yeah, a celebration of difference, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're all a bit, you know, different, aren't we?
Talking about a celebration of difference.
It sounds shit. It sounds
doesn't it? It sounds like a corporate thing to me. It's like that's the kind of thing that when you get a corporate day for women, they go, let's celebrate everyone being different.
And also, what the fuck does that even mean?
It doesn't. I know what I want it to mean.
What do you want it to mean?
Go back to the furrow.
Let's furrow. Let's plow some furrows. I'm into it.
I tell you, the outtakes of this episode are already.
I mean,
absolutely.
Talking about outtakes.
I liked when you said doing it. I was like, ooh, that could go an interesting place.
Okay, all right, let's do that. Talking about doing it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.